This episode of Duologues is especially close to me as we will be exploring a subject I've been always curious about. We are discussing mental health. Before we proceed to the conversation with my guest, I wanted to throw some light on the topic myself. The first fact is, I wanted to point out that mental health and mental illness are often confused. However, both have different meanings. A mentally healthy individual is in a state of mental well-being with the ability to cope with the stresses of life, realize their potential, learn and work well, and contribute to their community in meaningful ways. Mental health is more than the absence of mental disorders. In contrast, a mental illness or disorder is a clinical and significant disturbance in individuals' cognition, emotional regulation, or behavior. More importantly, while mental health belongs to everyone, today mental illness is one in four problems. The suffering of an individual from any mental illness impacts everyone around them. Usually, they need external help to cope with it. We often hear experts talk about the importance of taking proactive steps to improve our physical health through exercises, nutritional food intake. In case of mental health, we hear advice from professionals in equal measure to approach any situation proactively. However, the understanding and awareness about subject makes the approach mostly reactive. Instead of taking a reactive approach, a proactive stance towards both physical and mental health helps us to evolve as better version of ourselves. As a society, we face challenges in the sphere of mental illness, which are either known to only a certain set of people, say a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, or not known to many, which we can say are the people around us. Nearly 197 million people are suffering from mental health issue in India at this particular moment. With conditions like depression and anxiety disorders on a rise, especially post the pandemic, in the recent years, a 30% increase has been noticed in mental disorders, which are reaching alarming levels now. In schools, colleges, workplaces, and communities, there is a deep and wide prevalence of mental illness and disorders with almost 95% treatment gap. However, the reality is that mental health or related illnesses cannot be seen, but felt. The intangible nature of illnesses make them even more difficult to address. And just like we treat physical ailments, we need to handle mental illness with extreme sensitivity and care. In a country like India, because of awareness gap, most people spend their entire lives without getting treatment and support. The most common challenges faced by individuals while they are navigating their mental health journeys range from access to services and affordability to knowing their quality services and identifying appropriate services for the condition and need of the individual. It is extremely crucial to enable individuals to access to right treatment at the right time. We need to take a close look at systematic drivers which are causing the increase in the burden to find solutions. And if we take the right steps, we can mitigate the severity. Just like we need experts to guide us on improving our physical health, so is the case with mental health. Amaha is one of such solution provider, a first of its kind dedicated single specialist mental health branded service in the country. To understand the drivers that impact this sector, the difference between mental health and mental illness, how to identify when to get help, the solutions at a systematic level and more, let's dive into a dialogue with Neha Kripal, co-founder of Amaha, in this episode of Duologues. Neha, thank you so much for agreeing to do this session, this conversation of Duologues with me. And this is a topic which I believe is not only close to my heart, but I believe is something which I was much looking forward to. And the conversation today is going to be massively insightful to a lot of people. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And the domain where you are into, I understand that there is a story behind that. You started off with art, with the art fair, and then you started off this, co-founded this company, Amaha. Is there a story would you like to share with all of us? Why did this happen and why did you dive into this particular domain?
Yeah, often, thank you for that and thank you for having me on this show. I was just reflecting, often when you transition from something like the art world to a domain like mental health, there's a strong personal reason and story, and I think it's really a leap of purpose and faith. in wanting to make a difference in a sector that has really impacted you personally. Mm-hmm. So for me, the transition very much was to try and do something meaningful and make a difference, so that a lot of the families out there who have struggled in a lot of the ways that we did as young children growing up in India, don't go through those difficulties in accessing mental health care, in knowing what is the right health care to access at the right time, understanding different mental health conditions and what they're made of, how do you deal with them. We struggled, you know, in the 1980s, we were young and my mother had a severe mental illness called schizophrenia. And for 25 years, you know, there was a lot of suffering for her and for the full family. Mm-hmm. Today, she's doing very well. And she's my biggest strength, and she's stable and happy with her grandchild. But it's been a journey, and it's been a long, painful journey that is actually quite easily avoidable or minimized. So that was the passion call, I suppose.
So when it comes to mental health, you know, quite often people believe it is about depression and anxiety. I think these are the two most popular, so to say, mental health issues known to people.
Yeah.
But I think it is much beyond these two challenges which people face. From my point of view, what I would like to understand is that, can we say that mental health can be significantly different from mental illness? So, and then what are the different kind of issues which people normally face when it comes to mental illness?
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a important fundamental question, and actually people lose years in trying to arrive at this. So thank you for asking. You know, when we say in India there are 200 million people suffering from mental illness, those are diagnosed conditions, but mental health belongs to everybody. Okay, so the WHO says 1 in 4 people in the course of their life will have a mental health condition or an illness, but for every one person that is impacted, the family members, the co-workers, everybody has
gets impacted,
right? Has some experience or the other. It could be an economic challenge. It could be a caregiving sort of burnout or fatigue.
Yeah.
So there are, it impacts everybody around. So the thing to recognize is that there are things that we can do to enhance and nurture and nourish our mental health, which is something that is rewarding and in a great way to bring yourself in the present moment, to keep yourself alive and healthy with good habits, with friends, in relationships and successes in life. And then there are times, and it's a little bit fluid, right? It's a it's a spectrum really. And so in the course of your life, at some point you might be sort of further on and it might get diagnosed as a mental health condition. And at that point you say that perhaps this is something that I might need some support for from a psychologist, or maybe I need some medication for a brief period. And it's perfectly fine. I mean, it's that's the normal, and now it's known as very much the new normal, particularly after COVID. So we see almost in every home, whether it's grief, whether it's anxiety, the fear of job loss, relationship issues, even with young children, you see digital addiction. All of these are part of sort of this journey of experiencing your own mental health. And then there are more serious mental health conditions like bipolar and schizophrenia and other psychosis conditions that I describe. For children as well, we have a large child and adolescent mental health practice, and we see autism, various neurodevelopmental conditions. So we work with kids as young as a few months, going all the way across the lifespan to elders. And the idea really is to, you know, the name AMAHA also holds the idea of accessibility and affordability, and the appropriateness of care. So how quickly you can help someone find that. Typically, people spend maybe 10 to 15 years getting to their first mental health appointment. So how do you bridge
10
that?
10 to 15 years?
Yeah, because they, you know, you people tend to second guess, right? You'll say, oh, no, no, I'm not weak. I should do this on my own. I should be stronger.
It's a sort of stigma also, I think.
That's right.
People find it difficult to like come out and tell people about. It has been a stigma for a while. I mean,
it has.
Especially in our country.
Yeah, because people look at it as a weakness of character. In our cultures and in Asian cultures, it may be looked at as a sign of weakness. Men don't cry.
But I think it's a sign of strength, specifically to share your vulnerabilities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at the word courage, I mean, we talk about entrepreneurship and leadership and all of this. But fundamentally, what you need is the courage to be able to believe in yourself and believe in your idea and, you know, your impact in the world. And it comes from a place of knowing your own self and being at peace. And so all these things are important to address in time, because they can give you years of you know, your bank of resilience and your sense of courage and fearlessness and your ability to really make a difference.
So during this period of a potential 10 to 15 years, do such illnesses or issues continue to like aggravate over a period of time?
Yeah.
So when people walk into places like these, if we are able to create awareness, which is such that people walk into places like these to get diagnosed or treated, in that sense, we can catch such issues much more earlier.
Earlier, absolutely. So, you know, they say a majority of mental health conditions actually can be diagnosed before the age of 15. And, you know, you look at the age group of 15 to 29, where suicide is one of the leading causes of death. We're seeing a lot of self-harm, we're seeing many challenges, but the younger you catch a problem and the less extreme version, because these are some of these are progressive conditions,
right. You
know, so it gets worse over time, you're able to treat it much more easily, you're able to see recovery faster and better with lesser medication and other needs, and you're able to safeguard your family and your job and other things from the negative impact of that. So it's years returned to you. Of health and productivity if you intervene early on.
Right.
And so at Amaha, this has been our belief that can we create accessibility wherever somebody might be? So if they want to use an app, there's a digital platform, there's lots of resources on that. There are programs that you can do to work on yourself 24/7. If you'd like to talk to a therapist, you can talk in your mother tongue. We work in over 15 languages.
Wonderful.
We reach 600 cities now. Many of these cities don't have psychiatrists and therapists located in those cities.
Right.
So access is a big issue because they're largely in the bigger metros.
Absolutely.
And so the idea is to provide something accessible and available so you can WhatsApp, you can go online, you can go offline, but whatever your needs are, you're able to find help as early as possible.
So for this effect of any sort of mental illness, what would cause it? This might be a complex subject, but it might be attributed to some amount of genetical issues, experiences, emotional experiences in nature, trauma of a particular sort, and so forth. So what can be the potential causes? And then the next logical question would be that how can one identify symptoms early to be able to let that get diagnosed and then hence get treated?
Yeah, and it's very important because a lot of people judge their present moment and try and define why a particular problem is happening. But actually, it could very well be a genetic factor. It could be attributed to your early childhood experiences, a pattern maybe that repeats itself, or sometimes certain conditions, you know, you might have the propensity to have schizophrenia. Like I have a genetic makeup of my parent with a mental health condition. So I have a greater chance of developing a mental health condition. But there's a certain age at which these things kick off. And then if your own life trauma experiences and therapy and mental health you have handled, then your chances of suffering are less.
Right.
So you would look at it as a sort of a biopsychosocial combination of factors.
You spoke about the cause being biopsychosocial. So I'm assuming that the diagnosis of such matters also would be in the same framework and the treatment also would be in the same framework.
Absolutely.
So what I understand is that some of the treatments are like psychotherapists conducting therapies, counseling sessions, and medicines, so to say. So how do you look at this framework when it comes to such issues of bio, psycho and social in nature getting diagnosed? So what is the diagnosis process like in this case? Like, we do understand that for any physical ailment, how the diagnosis happen or how the tests happen when you proactively walk into a hospital to get your checkup done. How does this space look like when it comes to diagnosing the issues? And then eventually, how does the treatment look like?
Yeah, one of the challenges for people is that when they go for the physical health check, their physical health doctors may not know as much or talk as much about the correlation of mental health. So, you know, a lot of things like diabetes and all these conditions that you have are ongoing conditions.
Right.
Similarly, you have mental health conditions that actually have an overlap effect, whether it's hypertension or in cancer care or so many things. You know, if you have a liver issue, maybe there's an addiction challenge. So there's an overlap. But it doesn't often get diagnosed at that stage.
Yeah.
And often people will go to their nearby provider, and if he's a psychologist, they will do therapy. If it's a psychiatrist, he might give some medication or make a diagnosis. But people often don't really know what has happened.
Absolutely.
They don't really know the symptoms of what condition it might be. And the step of diagnosis is often missed. And with that, the treatment plan can go a little bit off direction and then not give the results. And then people get frustrated and they leave it all together.
Okay.
You know, so these are all the challenges. So compliance and adherence towards treatment is a problem. But it's a problem because of the way in which it has been delivered for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So the provider ecosystem is quite fragmented. Everyone works separately and...
And not necessarily follows a particular protocol.
The protocol is the collaborative care that is built across working the psychiatrist together with the medication and the diagnosis, the psychologist together providing the therapy and the other support, the psychological support.
So, it's the need of the hour to consolidate.
To consolidate
these
and work together.
So that the interlinkages, the requirements.
That's right. That's right. So, typically, because it is a combined set of factors and it is not one size fits all, different people need different kinds of care. Some might need more medication, less therapy, some might need the other way around. So, to figure out even for the same condition, what is a different individual's needs and what will work best for him, you need a multidisciplinary approach.
Absolutely.
So that's what we have here at Amaha. We have now an in-house team of almost 160 psychiatrists and therapists who work together.
Wonderful.
And so they're working as a team, they're comparing case notes, they're sharing best practices. There is a collaborative care plan that is developed for somebody to know, okay, these are all the steps of your recovery. These are all the things that you need to do on your therapeutic side. These are the self-help things. Community support is a big part of also feeling better. So we've actually got a large digital community on our platform where people, I think we have about 30,000 people now who are talking about issues they're facing.
Wonderful.
So there's a community for depression, there's a community for addiction, and you can talk to others, you can talk about your challenges. All of these things help in recovery.
Yeah,
talking to the corporates, talking to the schools and colleges,
yeah.
you know, so the environments of the people.
Right.
It all together helps in your recovery and the pace of recovery, the quality of your recovery, all of that.
So you need a consolidation of the approach or the solution and a holistic one.
That's right. Yeah.
So coming back to diagnostics, so, you know, the way I understand the physical space is that you have markers, you have blood tests and you have liver function tests and kidney function tests and so on and so forth. And then one is able to consistently monitor, you know, these parameters, these markers over a period of time. Are there some markers of similar nature? Because I'm assuming that there would not be a measure to a particular thing because I'm not very sure the magnitude of a mental related issue can be maintained or monitored or measured. So how do you monitor the improvement in a particular person? When one initially gets diagnosed and subsequently the treatment starts? And how do you maintain these records when the approach has to be consolidated and holistic?
Yeah.
You need to maintain these records the way the records of the physical space are being maintained. So how is that space?
One of the challenges for mental illness is the lack of these sort of tangible markers,
right.
You know, like a blood report, you know, it's
but they don't
fixed
exist.
Numbers, right? But you don't have a way of as tangibly recording.
Right. Yeah.
And so a lot of it is perhaps a little subjective and it is largely self-reporting at different stages of your journey and what your assessments tell you. So typically when you go in,
which is the psychometry and those kind
which
of
is
tests
different
which
assessments.
Happen.
So for example, if you think that maybe there's an ADHD problem,
right.
You know, a lot of people have discovered now adult ADHD, you know, especially among sort of founder communities and people in sort of high stress corporate roles who have said, you know, they've come out and talked about ADHD. Now, for something like that, there are assessments that are available. So you can take an ADHD test and you know, after 2 hours, you will know. And so
most of us would be suffering with that. Now. The attention spans anyway are dropping.
Yeah. So, you know, so there are lots of these tests available now that give you an assessment. And the ongoing reporting and monitoring, as you mentioned, is very important.
Right.
Again, it's not something that most people do.
Right.
You know, people suffer. My mother has had schizophrenia. It was untreated for 25 years. Today, she's been stable for 14 years. I mean, you know, she's doing very well. But these are long-term conditions where there is a chance of recurrence and relapse, you know, in addiction as well. A lot of mental health centers believe there's almost a 40% relapse in conditions that are serious and severe. And then
even
there are conditions.
Even after the recovery happens, when you start to feel that one totally recovered, it can
relapse. Right. And some of those are slow and ongoing management conditions. Mm. So if there's an anxiety issue or there's a depression issue, it can go on for years and you're managing it with medication, meditation, lifestyle changes, you know, eating properly, sleeping on time, etc. So those are all ways to manage conditions. Mm. But it doesn't necessarily go away. There are often things that are there for life and they have to be managed, and you can have a full recovery or a partial recovery. So in that case, monitoring it, measuring it, keeping it under check is very important, because otherwise you just keep sort of relapsing into sort of this dark space.
You would have already started to analyze data coming out of hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you spoke about meditation and medication. So before one gets into a situation where medication or a certain way of treatment is necessary, the science and art of yoga and meditation, which has existed into our country for thousands of years, are some indicators already there that people who practice such practices are less vulnerable or are able to, say, shift the severity as much as people who don't, comparative to them?
Yeah, I think it's not true for all conditions, but certainly for mental health overall, right?
Yeah.
Anything that is a yogic practice, right, or anything that is to do with meditation and other things that keep you connected with yourself in the moment, focused on your breathing, you know, you're able to feel your physicality and you're there in your being, are all positive, and they will help in creating cycles of wellness and replenish you in a way that most certainly will keep mental health challenges at bay. Right. However, sometimes you have a clinical condition like bipolar or schizophrenia or something else, which is, you know, then at that stage, you can't necessarily meditate your way out of it.
Yeah, sure.
And there is this belief, I feel, that people want to first deal with it through some of these techniques sometimes.
Yeah.
And you know, you tend to miss a diagnosis.
Yeah, true.
And you tend to not get any formal treatment for it because you are relying on other perhaps alternative ways. So it's a great support system, very much needed, and it really helps. In some conditions, it can act as a great preventive.
Yeah.
In some, it really helps in recovery and feeling better in the moment. But in some cases, it can't be the only way that you take care of yourself, because you do need to have the right medication and the right sort of interventions for your challenges.
Yeah, let me ask you a very fundamental question. We spoke about this subject at length already, but a very fundamental question: how one individual can understand, if at all there are mild symptoms in a very initial stage, about a particular issue, if not into mental illness, but say into mental health? How can one start to notice that something is happening to them? What would be those one or two symptoms where people can look at themselves and say that there is something which I need to look at?
Firstly, the important thing is to recognize our starting point. So when we're brought into this world, where we come in with complete sort of a sense of faith that we have people who will be there to take care of us, vulnerability is no problem. I mean, of course, nothing more vulnerable than a baby.
Yes.
And that you just have this sort of belief that you are worthy of love and care and protection. And as long as that stays with you in the course of your life, you know, that is of course a positive pattern. Now, in some cases, when you don't have that and that expectation is not met, or there are trauma experiences, then you start believing that I have to work towards love or work towards acceptance, or you know, there are things that are lacking in people's beliefs and so on. So these are all things that are a fundamental undercurrent that we don't necessarily recognize, because we think we're on top of our school and on top of our grades and on top of our first McKinsey jobs or whatever.
And consistent
whatever
comparisons
inspire.
When you look at yourselves, you know, the physical aspect of yourself, or intellectual, emotional, spiritual, there is a consistent comparison which is happening.
That's right. And because we're all external facing, right? We're looking at other people and we're measuring our self-worth based on how others see us, or how we are seeing them, and,
absolutely,
you know, where we think we should be landing by this age and stage, right?
Right.
And that fundamentally takes you away from yourself and your own truths and into sort of this world of comparison, which is obviously a challenge. So I think that's all part of life, and we have enough reserves in us and enough resilience to be able to tide over that.
That is true.
The challenge comes when you see a repeated, maybe over a 3-6 month period, you are seeing either your eating patterns going off, or you're not being able to sleep, or you're sleeping too much, or you're having a change in your relationships. Maybe there's a strain. So something that lasts, it's not just a one-off, you know, I mean, everybody has a bad day and you have a fight with your partner. And, you know, you bounce back.
So how are we dealing with this situation? I mean, the change itself is changing faster.
We're dealing with it pretty badly as a society, right?
Yeah.
And as a culture and as the world. We're dealing with it by throwing ourselves into things that create instant distractions, things that create a lot of hyperactivity in our mind and in our world. Absolutely crazy binge watching or on Netflix series.
And we are breathing shallow while we are consuming all
that. We're breathing shallow and we're creating more stressors, right? Everything, the pollution around us, the lack of green spaces, the pressure to get into, to get 98% to get into a decent college, or what the first paycheck should be. I mean, everything is stress inducing, and we are constantly judging ourselves or feeling that others are judging us. Our lives are set up to be fast-paced, to be multifaceted, and it's a conflict of positives or sort of lots of traumatic negative experiences. Preserving ourselves and preserving our state of mind. You know, what is the stuff we're putting in? It's like a, you know, how you don't think before you put things into a dustbin, right? We're consuming media, we're scrolling things, it's many different influences. How do you preserve your state of mind? How do you connect with your sense of being? Right. I mean, you talk about purpose and you talk about passion and being on a mission and all of that. How do you even identify your path when you are feeling lost inside? That's the real question, right? And if we can actually, as entrepreneurs, as people growing into sort of the work life as young people, if we can just remember to hear our inner voice and take away the distractions, the clutter, deal with the traumatic episodes, replenish our resilience.
This would be very difficult.
Right?
Is there a simple solution to this complex problem?
It's simple. The simple way that I like to put it is that we've got so busy in the human doing that we've forgotten how the essence of the human being. Right? If we can find a way of accepting ourselves, of loving ourselves, giving ourselves the self-care that is needed when it is needed, and not being harsh. So I suppose at the simplest level, it's really about saying, are we able to let go of these expectations that we sometimes put on ourselves and we think others are putting on us? And are we able to be our own best self, whatever that might be?
So I think setting examples, spreading the word, creating the necessary awareness is important in such cases. And if you look in the recent past, a lot of people in the position of responsibility, authority, celebrities have come out and shared their experiences with people. So I believe that it's kind of work in progress already. So coming back to Amaha, you're building a niche in this space by building capabilities which provide holistic solutions to people, from diagnosing it to treating it. It's natural to imagine, like, if I go back to my own experience when I was looking at opting something into engineering, during those days, electronics was starting to be in fashion because that was the advent of the digital era. And then subsequently, you know, those days people were not really opting civil. And today, if you look at the kind of infrastructure which is getting built, that is in fashion. And so was the case with the medical streams at that point of time. Yeah. People used to opt for specific ones. So my question is that, is there a gap between availability of experts, say psychologists or therapists or counselors in this particular space comparative to the demand? I mean, we understand that in excess of 200 million people in our country may face a challenge or other. So in that situation, while the awareness is expanding, so one can safely expect that the opportunity to be able to do good to people will consistently expand. In that sense, we need experts to address this particular cause.
Absolutely.
How is the situation like?
Yeah, I mean, today young people are looking at this field and profession with a lot of sort of promise and potential. Mm-hmm. But historically, there was, because of the stigma, I mean, it was a bit of a downer to look at psychiatry as a probably a choice in the medical field. And even the field of psychology has been quite abstract. And even today, the regulation around it, the training around it, there are many gaps.
Okay.
If you look at the country overall, we're producing only about 8,000-10,000 psychiatrists and psychologists.
8,000-10,000 only.
Yeah, and so there's a big gap between the demand and the supply.
Right.
And you know, today the numbers are maybe one doctor for every 3 lakh patients. So this problem isn't getting solved simply by finding psychiatrists, right? And that's really the challenge. So how do you build capacity and scale on the supply side? Is by creating it at multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
So can we educate school teachers on early intervention so they can catch a problem younger?
Okay.
Right? Can we educate corporate managers and bosses and leaders and CEOs so that they can build a culture of mental wellness and they can also pick up if a teammate is struggling or has an addiction problem or whatever it might be? can we create case managers and community workers who are there as first responders, you know, mental health helplines being there, or people who are doing suicide prevention work. You know, these are things that will really help in managing the load on the mental health care ecosystem. And then to be able to build capacity.
Right.
So it's about improving the breadth and depth of the talent that is available. And of course, making sure that it is it's not leaving the country. A lot of the UK has more Indian psychiatrists than India has. So I feel like the role of organizations like ours, and now there are many more that are in this space, is really to be able to hold talent within the country and be able to provide India the best help that is needed across across these services, across community-based programs, and also inpatients, you know, because for adverse conditions, you need to have mental health inpatient centers. Again, India needs about 36,000 beds. There's a big shortfall. And so we are also hoping that as Amaha expands now in this new year, we are going to set up multiple more outpatient centers and then start working towards the inpatient journey as well.
Yeah, much needed. Yeah. More power to you. And you spoke about the necessity for corporates and corporate leaders to understand this important cause. In this particular perspective, I mean, one is that you are providing solutions for people at large, the societies and the people who are walking into or having access to the application of Amaha. How are you looking at corporates embracing this cause? Are there some experiences if you would like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for us, we recognize that we're spending most of our productive working hours in the day in our offices and in our organizations. And so sensitizing leadership, creating programs for not just the heads of the organizations, but the HR and different line managers is super important.
Okay.
So we have an entire sort of employee mental health program. We have a digital dashboard in which the employers can see what the overall health of the organization is across various metrics. There are therapy and psychiatry services that are available. So today we work with over 100 corporates and colleges, large ones like American Express, smaller ones, various startups, law firms, there's a whole range.
This topic can go on and on, but moving on to your personal life, like having done two major interventions into your professional life, Indian Art Fair and now Amaha. I mean, these are two significantly different domains. I think if at all anything will cut across both would be that both these are in a very nascent stage when it comes to our country, a very niche in nature. And the necessity to sort of democratize both art and, say, mental well-being, if at all, these would be constraints between these two. But from your perspective, I mean, initially starting off Indian Art Fair and then getting into this space, how was the journey like? And I do understand why this became your purpose, why mental well-being became your purpose, that part I understand. How did Indian Art Fair happen?
Yeah, I think for me, life began as an accidental entrepreneur. It was more a passion project. You know, when you're in your early 20s, there's very little expectation. It doesn't matter if you fail. And I just thought it would be a great thing to do and let's have a go. And so it started quite innocently, I have to say. I was always very interested in the arts. And my previous, in school, I was largely a sports person. So schooling in college years was, I used to play hockey and I used to play badminton and I had a sporting career until I bust my knees. And I was very interested in the arts, but I couldn't paint to save my life. And so I thought I'd surround myself with art. And it started quite accidentally as an idea. I think the what is also in common between the two is this passion about building something that is differentiated and unique, that can make a long-standing contribution in a sector that's very fragmented. So looking back now, I would say that the most exciting part about building the Art Fair and also now joining Amit and building Amaha is building an ecosystem in a place that doesn't otherwise, in a sector that doesn't otherwise have it, and being able to help bring different people together who may not typically have been at the same forum, but for them to come together for a shared purpose and a larger collective cause. Because real change can only happen if you're able to integrate all these forces, align energies, create opportunities for shared learning. And I think that was the main driver behind the format and the idea of the Art Fair, to democratize it, to make it available, to make it accessible, very similar to the mental health journey. And in a sense, bring Indian art on the main stage of the global art seen, because India was not really considered, even though we have, you know, hundreds of years of rich art history.
Right.
On the contemporary global art scene, we were not really a destination. And while Indian art was popular among collectors globally, but it wasn't, there was nothing in India to bring them to. So now, I mean, the art fair is in its 15th year. When I sold the art fair, I sold it to one of the world's largest art fair organizers, again with the idea of creating India as a destination for art and putting that on the global map.
Right.
And the journey towards mental health then is in spirit similar, looking at a sector that is largely fragmented, perhaps a lesser variable quality. People are not sure who to trust, where is the credibility. So where do they go that they can believe and trust that, you know, I will get the right support and the right care here? So that ecosystem approach, the idea of bringing different stakeholders together and also mainstreaming mental health. So it's not just mental health people talking about mental health problems, you know, but having cross-sectoral conversations like these,
right,
where we're talking to funders, we're talking to corporate, legal profession, people, you know, across different industries, technology, and talking about the impact of mental health and vice versa, and the right. impact of technology on improving mental health as well, you know, how it can be leveraged. So I think it's really about broad-basing it, mainstreaming it, and being able to drive it with a sense of passion and entrepreneurial energy.
Right.
So to me, so that's what's exciting.
When you say mainstreaming it, like, you know, when I look back, so Panasonic is a 105-year-old company, and one of the philosophies, the business philosophies of our founder used to be that technology should be like tap water. It should be available in abundance and at an affordable cost. What is your objective here? What is your basic business philosophy here at Amaha? And how do you see the mid and the long term when it comes to positioning? We are a country where I believe we can look at positioning ourselves at the point which we really wish to. So what is your objective? I mean, when you say mainstreaming, are you looking at democratizing solution of mental well-being to as large as people possible? So what is the objective?
Absolutely.
Here?
And the way to think about it is that India has one third of the global mental health burden. One third of the world's addicts, one third of the world depressed, one third of the world's suicide cases are in India. And
not be in that proportion. What makes us vulnerable?
You know, there are so many things. I mean, there are socioeconomic causes that are related
Mostly
to that.
That.
There are so many factors, but fundamentally, those are the numbers. And the other fact to recognize is that mental health is something that no part of the world has cracked. You know, no country, whether it's developed countries or Asian countries, can say, yes, we've sorted out our mental health problem.
True.
So it is a very equalizing situation where globally, everybody is struggling to figure out what is the best way in which you can provide care and support that is scalable, that is sustainable, that has the right credibility and quality, and that provides lasting outcomes, right? Because ultimately, people have to get better, people have to feel better to begin with, then they have to actually get better, and then they have to stay better, right?
Which
and
is this the is tagline also, at Amaha.
Which is exactly our tagline, right? Because you have to think about it across all those parameters to say, what can I do to be able to take the expert help together with the community-based support, use technology in the right measure, but yet not alienate, create physical on-ground centers where people can interact face-to-face. How can we create an accessible ecosystem of care that people can trust? It's not even about providing the gold standard of care. It's saying this should be the minimum benchmark of what people should expect. So it's helping people understand that, you know, you might have not come to getting help for many years in your life and you might have challenges, but the minute you become ready and willing, after that, your care management journey in mental health should be easy, should be accessible, should be predictable. You should have known milestones, how you can go about that. And you should not be struggling or figuring out how to decide or going pillar to post, because that wastes more time and you get better, worse. So that's really the idea, that to make the system of care management more efficient, more credible, more easily accessible, and more outcome oriented.
Right.
Not just, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, I'll give you my medicines, or I'm a therapist. But how are you thinking about the person's best interests? How are you making sure that that person benefits from the collective treatment that they have been given and has the best outcomes and has the best sort of chance of rehabilitating in life? That's
so
really the idea.
Affordable, and the third one is accessible, affordable.
it's the appropriateness of care, you know, and in a way, the M and the H is over mental health.
Right. It's reasonably clear that your very purpose is actually fueling what we are doing, what you are doing here at Amaha. It's reasonably clear.
That's right.
But this brings me to my last question, that what is that very higher purpose which, say, wakes you up every morning to do what you do? Have you identified with your higher purpose?
I think so. I think for me, it's, you know, if I have to be truest to myself, then the things that have impacted me negatively in all my early years are the things that have helped me grow the most and make me who I am today. And so if I was to just be true to that and try and solve for making sure that the journey of others is slightly different, then I think that's really what my calling is personally. And so everything that I do at Amaha, my partner, Dr. Amit Malik, is the founder and CEO, and he runs the organization. But everything that I do is geared towards the experience of mental health care and support in communities and with organizations, so that people's lives can improve for the better and they can hear these stories from each other and also from me, because I believe stories give a lot of strength and a lot of hope and perspective to people. So
absolutely,
this is really my purpose.
Sure. Yes, your story is very inspiring, and I'm sure this conversation is going to be highly insightful, very insightful for a lot of people.
So
once again, I would like to thank you on behalf of the team for this conversation. And I'm sure, as I said, that your story is going to inspire a lot of people, and this conversation is going to be very insightful to a lot. So thank you very much, Neha, for the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, Manish.
Thank you.
Listen to more conversations on Duologues across Spotify, JioSaavn, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcasts.